I think the job of being a teacher is so rewarding in so many ways.
The connection between you and the whole class, that's still unbeatable.
When my pupils are successful, it feels incredible.
I think the greatest thing for me is seeing the pupils that I teach love the subject as much as I do.
I don't think there's any other job where you get the same satisfaction.
That's why I chose to teach.
You could get £26,000 tax-free to train, search, apply to teach. Selected subjects only, subject to eligibility.
For the first time in 13 years, the co-hosts of Gamertag Radio are going to have the first live recording in front of an audience during PodFest 2018. This live recording event is free to attend February 9th, 2018 from 6 to 7 p.m. It's going to take place at PodFest Multimedia Expo 2018 in Orlando, Florida. See Paris, Pete, and Danny live at PodFest 2018. For more information, head over to GamertagRadio.com or PodFest.us.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen. Podcasting since 2005.
Take it out.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Back on the scene.
With your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Here we go.
Welcome to episode 728 of Gamertag Radio. I'm your host, Paris, and I'm here with Pete.
What up? Morning, dude.
Hey, good morning. No Danny this episode. Danny is in New Orleans. He is at the Call of Duty World Championships, right?
Is it World League? I think so.
Call of Duty something. He's somewhere in New Orleans where they're playing a lot of Call of Duty. That's where he is. But I know he's been getting interviews and all that from that event, and I'm sure he'll be playing that on Wednesday's episode or Thursday's episode. I don't know. I just come on and record and they tell me. But yeah, it'll be the Thursday episode that'll come out then, unless you're watching this live on Twitch, which will be Wednesday. But again, welcome everyone to the show. Obviously, it's still January, so not a super lot to talk about, but I think we'll go ahead and push through this and figure out something. So let's just start it off this way. Again, you can find us over at Gamertag Radio, and Danny, let everyone know where they can send us feedback.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, Pete. So Nintendo, they had a Nintendo Direct this week. Yep. And they talked about some of the games that will be coming out. And I found it interesting, but kind of like I was talking last week, I wasn't expecting a whole lot from them on this, you know, because again, I think they're going to hold back any of the true heavy hitting titles until probably E3 or maybe a Nintendo Direct around that time frame of E3. But the one thing that stood out from this to me was Donkey Kong Country. The fact that we're going to get Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, which was a Wii U title, and they're porting that over to the Nintendo Switch. And we're getting Mario Tennis back. So those are two titles that stood out to me. Looks like Mario Rabbids is going to get some additional DLC along with Super Mario Odyssey as well. So anything from the Direct stood out to you?
Dark Souls Remastered coming to the Switch, bringing a heavy level of difficulty to the Switch titles. I think seeing them start to tip the scales towards Donkey Kong as a character overall is going to be really good, because I think that's a precursor towards what could be, and I'm going to put on my Miss Leo hat now, a Donkey Kong title in the very near future. I would not be surprised if we potentially see something at E3. I think it's the right time to finally bring out the big guy. So I'm looking forward to it. I think seeing them bring out, you know, Donkey Kong for Donkey Kong Country, Tropical Freeze, the Mario Rabbids DLC coming out this spring with Donkey Kong. I think this is like their precursor. This is their way to like introduce him back into the fold and then come, let's say, E3 or GDC or something, or Gamescom, that's when they drop the announce.
Yeah, I agree. And another one I don't think you mentioned, Payday 2 is getting a port over to the Switch as well, I believe in February, which is cool.
With a new character. It's not just a port. It's a new port with a character. So that's really cool.
My only thing with that is you're going to have to be very strategic about planning around to get everyone online and probably get a Discord channel going and that whole thing. I mean, that's the one thing that Nintendo really needs to figure out with the online multiplayer. For anything that requires voice chat, dude, you got to come up with a better solution. You just have to. Because it should be portable that if I'm anywhere with an internet connection, I can just hop on with my Switch and go. Versus, all right, let me get my laptop out and my phone and let me bring up the Skype app. And it's just like, it's too complicated. Yeah. You know. So please, Nintendo, in 2018, figure out a better voice strategy for your online games. But going back to what you were originally saying with Donkey Kong, to me, this is just a precursor. It makes a lot of sense that we get a new Donkey Kong on the Nintendo Switch in 2018. It's time, like you're saying, it's just simply time. But I do agree with, and I know some people don't like this, but I do agree with Nintendo's strategy of taking their Wii U games and bringing them over to the Switch, because they know the numbers. They see that they made some quality games on the Wii U and a lot of people didn't play them. I'm fully expecting Smash Brothers to be ported over from the Wii U this fall onto the Switch while they work on the proper successor. And then obviously we'll get a new Pokemon game at some point. Metroid will come over, just things like that. But to take those quality Wii U games and put them onto the Switch, some people are going to be double dipping, but let's be honest, it's a very small percentage of gamers that actually bought those Wii U games that'll now play them on the Switch. So in that sense, these are almost like new games. Like, example, that Donkey Kong Country game, I never played it, so I'm interested in it. I'll pick it up. Why not? I mean, I love Donkey Kong Country, but as far as the Wii U went, I knew it was a system that was DOA, and I kind of just stopped buying games for it. After, you know, early on I did, obviously, but then once it got a couple years into its life cycle, I go, why am I buying games for this thing? They're going to get rid of it soon anyways and move on to something else. And then sure enough, here we are with the Switch. So
go ahead. I think I have, and it's not going to be me because I'm not really a Smash Brothers player, but I can see a backlash happening if they try to bring that over to the Switch, because that's usually a real Twitch response type game, and the real hardcore players, which is essentially the ones that are still carrying the banner and flag of Smash. I mean, they're the ones that are still lugging 80-pound CRT televisions to these tournaments, and they want the wired control. I don't know if they're going to want to deal with wireless connectivity from their Joy-Cons, potential interference that could impact gameplay and their timing. When they're fighting, doing one-on-ones and groups and stuff, that's going to potentially be an issue. So I don't know, knowing that Nintendo, and I don't know if they benefit in any way, shape, or form from all these Smash tournaments and stuff like that, but I wonder if they take that into effect, right? Like, do they take that knowledge that, you know, there's still this heavy player base of people that play Super Smash Brothers that they're going to now be relegated to either continuing to play on an older, on an older thing? Or is this just to appease the newer group of fans that are coming across to play the game? So it'll be curious. There's always going to have that contingent of players that are going to want to play it on a competitive basis, but this might just be easier for the casuals, like ourselves or like Danny's and stuff like that, who just want to go in and just play Smash Brothers with their friends and not really care about having to lug around a heavy TV and latency and stuff like that.
You know, you bring up a good point. Excuse me for a second. I got to find it on the ground. Name dropping. So when we were at Twitch about a month ago, and that when we got the little tour around, that just you bring that up. Remember, we went to their game room.
Yes.
And exactly what you're describing. CRT televisions, yep. Wired controllers. There was like, no, this is not a game. This is real life. This is serious. You know, they wanted to make sure they had every advantage possible when they were playing Smash Brothers. So that does bring up a good point. But at the same time, most people aren't playing it that way. And they're obviously going to cater towards the majority. So if they can get away with just simply porting over the Wii U version and saying, hey, if you're worried about playing it mobile, it is the Switch. Put it, plug it into your television. I'm sure some third-party company comes out with a wired controller and they'll just go from there. So it still just makes sense, in my opinion, to every Wii U game that they put out will eventually show up on the Switch in right. some form of or another, in my opinion.
Now, I'm just curious how they would do that with the base. There's only one USB jack, right? On the back of the Switch, on the TV base?
Yeah, I'm like literally looking at mine off in the distance.
I'm curious how
there's one in the front, isn't there? I'm going to look. Keep talking.
I barely touch mine. Mine usually is in mobile mode. I think there's only one. It's the one that goes into the back. Because I'm curious how you're going to be able to, how you'd be able to charge or connect two controllers if you wanted to have two people go, you know, with that wired connection. So Arctic is saying that there's one in the back. There's two on the side and one in the back. So of course I know nothing. I'm Jon Snow this week. I know nothing about the Switch TV.
So I literally just
disconnected yours.
I literally just grabbed it. Yeah, there's the two. There's the two here.
Okay.
And then, yeah, so he said the back. I call it the front. But yeah, there's two on the front or the back or however you want to situate it. But
okay,
yeah.
So there is multiple. There's so two. Then you can have multiple. Mm-hmm. Then you can have at least two people, you know, going head to head on Smash. So that's really cool. Yeah, I wasn't really worried about whether you could recharge it. I think that was just a slip on my mouth because it's still early for me. Not as early as you, but I'm but yeah, that was my main concern. But if that's the case, you still might have that contingent of fans from, you know, that are the hardcore.
Oh, of course
they're gonna always want to gravitate back towards the original with the CRTs because they want that instant refresh. But I mean, hey. Again, like you said, maybe this isn't, you know, maybe this is just to get a bigger player base overall. People who don't play Smash Brothers for the competitive side of it, right? They just want to have a brawler that, you know, because people like playing brawlers. Whether it's, you know, a fighter game like Smash or you've got like a Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter, there's always like an, you know, like a case for regular, you know, for regular fighter type games for the public, for the casuals. I mean, you know, Xbox did it with Mortal Kombat on theirs, so I don't see why not, right? Like it's good. I'm glad if that's the case, then yeah, then there is an opportunity. I just don't see it going towards full tournament mode with that.
Agreed. And I don't think that would be Nintendo's purpose for bringing it out anyways. And let's be honest, the people that are hardcore into it for the tournament play, that's just the vocal minority. You know, the majority of people, like we were saying, aren't playing it that way anyways. But I mean, overall, a decent first of the year Nintendo Direct, in my opinion. Nice to see some new content coming to it. I mean, the majority of it is a port from something else, which, hey, look, fine, whatever. Mario Tennis, I'm very curious to play, though. So looking forward to that. I will still beat the drum that Nintendo wears a virtual console. I mean, we got to start talking about it. Start talking about your online strategy. What are you going to do? You know, I know there's going to be the paid version of it. So what is that going to ultimately be? Is that something that's coming out in 2018? You know, because I'm actually starting to doubt that a little bit because I really wish Nintendo would talk about it more. Is it they're just simply going to wait until E3 to unveil it all and it comes out this fall? Which, hey, if that's the case, fine. But I will say over and over again, what actually leads me to another topic. I don't want to see a Super Nintendo 64 Mini. I don't want the Super Nintendo Clay. I don't want any of those anymore. I want the virtual console. I want to play those classic Nintendo games on my Switch.
Yeah.
That's where I want to play them. And that's the point of the virtual console. So I hope they come out with a sound strategy. I hope pricing wise, it's reasonable. You know, they're not trying to screw over a bunch of consumers by overcharging us for previously played games. But, you know, we'll see on that. So,
is that Nintendo's money grab to be able to start funding additional game development by schlepping these mini console classic reiterations?
Well, I think the NES Classic was just an experiment. Hey, let's see. That's why there was such a shortage of them, and that's mm-hmm. why they discontinued it, because I think, oh, wait, there actually is a demand for this thing. They weren't ready for it. And I think the Super Nintendo one was the quote-unquote, as you're saying, money grab. Look, we can make money off of this thing. Our virtual console isn't ready yet, so until it is, this will pacify people. That's what I kind of think it is. And, oh, by the way, let's make some money on the side while we do it.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I think the virtual console will be a huge hit for them. And will be a boon financially for them, because you have old people like me that will go back and buy NES and Super Nintendo games versus the newer generation, which may or may not be interested in those so much. But I mean, I know I'll go back and buy them. Why not? Because there's definitely games that were on the NES and the Super Nintendo that I want to play.
Yeah, I want Excitebike on my Switch. I want to play that on my Switch. I want to play it on my TV. I don't want to have to schlep another $80, $90 for a box to give me the opportunity to play that. Give me the virtual console already. Why are they waiting so long for this?
Now, the curious thing about this will be third party. Like let's just take Capcom as an example, because obviously they're coming out with their Mega Man collection. Yep. So since they're coming out with their Mega Man collection and they're going to have all the Mega Man games on it and they're going to be able to charge us basically full price for it, why would they put any of the Mega Mans on the virtual console? No. Go buy our super pack, and we make more money that way versus people being picking and choosing which games they want. So I'll be curious to see how third parties handle that with their classic games. Are they just going to try and bundle them all into one package and charge $60 for it? Or are they going to have them piecemeal, you know, a la carte on a virtual console for $5 or $10 a game? So
I think they'll do both. I think it makes sense to do both, because maybe – Because think about it, maybe there's that player base that's out there that doesn't want the full bundle, right?
So
they just want the current one. But that's what I'm saying.
Capcom. So I'm almost $60.
But a la carte it. But a la carte it, because you're gonna have to make, you know, you want people to have to go towards the virtual, you know, the virtual console or whatever, and buy it separately or have it licensed on like a mini classic or whatever, you know what I mean? Whatever their SNES, you know, Super Famicom, you know, classic 64 box, whatever, you know, I can see it going both ways. So from a business perspective, I would say let the consumer have the choice whether they want to buy it as a bundle or if they want to buy it a la carte, you know, piecemeal, you know, little by little. Because maybe somebody only wants a specific version of Mega Man. Maybe they only want two, right? Maybe they want, you know, the bundle. I mean, hell, I have it somewhere in here. I bought the Mega Man Gold bundle from Best Buy like 2-3 years ago when it came out, because it was limited edition. You know, everything came in. It was like a solid gold, like a special edition box. I've never opened it, but I've got it, right? The problem is I paid for that and I don't have, you know, I don't have the mini console to play it on. So it's essentially just purchased just for the collectors, you know, the collector in me. So yeah, I'd have to at this point triple dip on that if I were to get it for the Switch. So.
No, I don't disagree with what you're saying, and all that is very possible. I always try and think of the worst case scenario, and the worst case scenario is these companies trying to force us into bundles versus being able to get things a la carte. So, I mean, obviously we'll have to wait and see when the virtual console is released and what type of announcements third parties will have along with it. So I'm excited for it. Like I said, the Nintendo Switch a year ago, because I think it was a year ago it got announced, right? But anyways, a year ago, if you asked me about Nintendo Switch, I'd be like, man, nah. Nah, this ain't gonna work. I don't believe it. You know, I was very skeptical of it. And I'm somewhere Danny smiling, because Danny was right. he was on board from day one with it. And look, I'm happy to be wrong about it. I really am. And I'm excited to see what the future will hold for Nintendo and the Switch, because the more successful it is, look, he's in. But I'm excited to see what the future holds for it, because the more successful it is, the more third parties are going to get on board, the more indie companies will get on board, and we'll start getting some unique titles that will truly take advantage of the portability of the Switch. So
yeah,
looking forward to it.
I agree with you. I mean, I was on the hater train, dude. And I'm the one holding the Switch, right? I was the one.
Yeah, literally, literally when you got it, because you got the Mario one, I'm like trying to talk you out of it, going, no, man, you buy it, you can get it cheaper if you get the regular one, and this, save money. You're like, no, I'm no, getting this.
No, I wanted the limited edition all red one. I wanted the Mario red one, right? I just think it's hilarious that that's something that, that was a thing for me. Like I rushed out. Like as soon as I saw that bundle alert come up, like you were like, oh my God, Pete. And I was like, pew, you know, and within like 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes, like that's all it took for me to go through the mental checklist of, should I get it? Should I not get it? Should I hold? Should I wait? Should I try to get it? Nope. I went crazy and I just went and I bought everything. So
yeah.
Hey, you saw how quickly I pulled it out, right? Because it was literally sitting right next to me. That's, you know, that's, it's in my backpack on a regular. So whenever I go,
oh, that's
backpack,
what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's there.
Yeah, that's why when we got into this discussion, I'm like, mine's literally sitting right off camera. I'm like, oh yeah, let me grab it and take a look. So yeah, it's a phenomenal piece of hardware. I really enjoy it and excited that Nintendo is quote unquote back.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they're a true contender, you know, in the console space right now with what they're able to do with the Switch, which actually brings me to another topic since we're talking virtual console and backwards compatibility. I think it was Kotaku. I could be wrong. It might be Polygon, but I think it was Kotaku. They had an article that came out recently saying that that while PlayStation and Nintendo is selling, Nintendo Switch is selling great right now, it's actually the Xbox One that is doing backwards compatibility the right way, which I completely agree with. I really like what Microsoft has done with their backwards compatibility strategy. But then the interesting, if you actually read the article, what they're talking about is, but the dirty little secret about backwards compatibility is people really don't care about backwards compatibility. And I agree with him on this level. I care about Nintendo backwards compatibility as far as those old games. But when we get into the PlayStation Xbox era of old games, I keep it moving. I keep it moving. I'm not really looking to go back and play like original Xbox games or play PlayStation 2 games. Hell, even really PlayStation 3 games, which, by the way, I signed up for PlayStation Now. And I did do the trial and I've been playing The Last of Us on PlayStation Now. Works fine. It works fine.
Okay.
Because it's a single player game. I'm scared to play a multiplayer. I don't even know if they have multiplayer games on there. But
I don't think
The Last of Us. Yeah. But The Last of Us, I mean, it's very similar to On Live when I had that back in the day. I mean, it's fine for single player. I'm just not going to pay that much money for it. That's what it really comes down to. Because at any moment in time, PlayStation Now can go away. And now I don't own that game anymore. So that's just kind of how I feel about it. But for anyone that, and we actually got some voicemails and emails about that too. But for anyone that was curious about PlayStation Now, I mean, from a single player standpoint, you know, and since I'm too many cords, I'm not grabbing it. I grab my PlayStation 4 controller and plug it into my PC and it works just fine. No real issues. Now, if you truly are looking for lag, you can kind of sort of see it. But like I said, in a game like The Last of Us, it doesn't matter, but I would not recommend it for something that is like a Twitch game where, you know, you got to have the fast reflex skills to be able to play it, because then that's when the lag's really going to show up. But going back to what I was saying before, as far as backwards compatibility stuff, yeah, I'm not a big nostalgia guy for the quote unquote more modern games that would be backwards compatible. So look, I understand the importance of backwards compatibility, especially going into these next generation of consoles when the next Xbox and the PlayStation 5 come out. Right. I do believe they need to have some type of backwards compatibility. And I'm really looking at Sony when I say this. Sony better not with PlayStation 5 tell me that I got to buy PlayStation Now to be able to play my PlayStation 4 games and or keep my PlayStation 4. I should have a PlayStation 5 that should be able, at a minimum, play all the PlayStation 4 games. along with whatever the PS5 games. And I mean, we can pretty much guarantee at this point that Microsoft is going to be completely backwards compatible all the way back to the Xbox One when it comes to their backwards compatibility strategy for their next console, because hell, they're doing it right now.
Right.
So I see no reason that they would stop doing it going to the next console. So yeah, I don't know. I'm curious
what Phil's theory is with regards to with regards to his no games left behind comments, right? I know that means current gen, whether it's, you know, Xbox One or Xbox One X, and now with their, how does that tie to their backwards compatibility tagline, right? Does that mean that we will start seeing Perfect Darks and, you know, Cameo and, you know, help give me a Viva Pinata, if we go back, I mean, hell, we're starting now to see the Duke controller back out on out in the space now, right? That just got released from one of the third party resellers. Will we start seeing OG Xbox games on there? Like, you know, the original, was it Project Gotham Racing, et cetera. Will we start seeing those in the, on the, on the backwards compatibility list?
Why not? I mean, it just makes sense. Cause again, with the OG Xbox games, I mean, they're slowly but surely starting to roll those things out. I think at some point we'll see a Cameo, which, as much, speaking of Cameo, in my mind, I'm very fond of Cameo. I feel like it was a great launch game for the 360. I guarantee if I play it now, I'd be like, ugh, terrible. What is this? I guarantee it. So I kind of want to just hold that nostalgia in my head and never see Cameo again in my life, and just in my head remember it fondly.
Well, I mean, we're talking games like KOTOR, right? Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. Yeah. That'd be so good. You know, I would love to play something like that on there. You know, we could play Psychonauts now on PC and stuff like that. So it's, mm-hmm. you know, that's, I'm not surprised, you know, of potentially having that opportunity there. But I mean, that whole, I think from that point backwards, that's more of the library of old school backwards compatible, you know, potential games that I would like to play. I don't want to go and I think Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, I think that catalog of games is still too fresh in the memory banks that I don't want to go and replay those again. I don't have as much nostalgia built up for that generation of games as I do from those older than, you know, Xbox 360 and potentially Xbox One. I mean, there's maybe a handful of games that I'd like to play again, yeah. just to revisit for a few minutes and see if it still holds up. But I'd much rather go back to the days of the Nintendo and Nintendo, the Sega Genesis, like Sewer Shark, as okay of a game as, I had a lot of fun playing that, right? So I would love to be able to revisit that, even if it's just to realize, yeah, this was a mistake, let me go back to what I'm playing now.
Right. No, and that's kind of the thing with nostalgia, is in your mind, you have this fond memory of a game, but then when you actually go back, you play, you're like, oh, wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Psychonauts. Psychonauts is that game. It's until you realize that, oh, wait, this camera really, really sucked, right? Like, yeah. That's horrible. But the game itself, for the most part, still holds up, you know, what is it, like 12 years later, 13 years later now?
Which, and this actually transitions me into something else. Like, go back and play Perfect Dark or GoldenEye from the Nintendo 64. And I know they remade Perfect Dark on the Xbox 360. You could get it in the Live Arcade where they kind of remastered it. I think it was 1080p and all that stuff. But if you go back and play it now, that's not good. But man, I tell you what, back in the late 90s, that was, yo, GoldenEye was my game. I mean, I loved GoldenEye. I mean, it is kind of the great grandfather to console first person shooters. You know what I mean? That was the first person shooter on a console that worked. You know, and then obviously Perfect Dark was the successor to that, which obviously led on to, you know, the godfather of all of it, Halo Combat Evolved, and here we are today.
I think the job of being a teacher is so rewarding in so many ways.
the connection between you and the whole class, that's still unbeatable.
When my pupils are successful, it feels incredible.
I think the greatest thing for me is seeing the pupils that I teach love the subject as much as I do.
I don't think there's any other job where you get the same satisfaction.
That's why I chose to teach.
You could get £26,000 tax-free to train. Search, apply to teach. Selected subjects only, subject to eligibility.
At LV, our home insurance comes from the heart. It's not just about giving you a personal claims handler to take care of you all the way. It's about looking after you in other ways too. Like when you go direct to us, buy online and get a massive 25% discount. To see how much you could save with the Which Insurance Provider of the Year 2017, go direct to lv.com. Online discount for new customers only, excludes home emergency and home legal expenses.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
But that brings me up to another thing. Again, my Miss Leo.
Hey, darling. This is certified psychic Miss Leo. The guys at Gamertag Radio have pulled me out of retirement to give them some free readings. So I've been using the power of the tarot cards to look into the future, baby. You hear me?
I was listening to Podcast Unlocked, you know, Ryan McCaffrey and those guys. And, you know, we've talked about this in the chat with the link that came out. And this is all complete rumor. There's nothing backing this up. But there was a website post or a Reddit post or whatever it was where someone, quote unquote, that's kind of in the know, and the same person actually did hit on some things in the past, was mentioning that Microsoft is, and I'm not going to say the way they said it, I'm just going to paraphrase it, but basically that Microsoft is working on a new Perfect Dark, and the Coalition is helping another studio with it. And I will go back to something I said probably 6 months ago. It's that Black Tusk game. It makes sense. That game didn't just go on a shelf and disappear. And that Black Tusk game is now the Coalition. That's a studio. They probably took that IP, handed it off to another studio, and they turned it into Perfect Dark. I'm going to stick with that until I'm wrong, because it just makes too much sense that they would repurpose that IP and do something with it. And the fact that the Coalition is, quote, again, rumor. I'm not saying this is fact. This is rumor. And the fact that the Coalition is helping with it makes a lot of sense as well. And then the other one that I said last week, remember I said we were talking about Fable 4, and I go, remember, Playground Games, quote unquote, is working on an RPG. And then that's what this rumor also said, that Fable 4 is being made by Playground Games.
Right.
Again, makes a lot of sense. So let's, for a second, let's just have some fun with this and say it's true. Let's say it's true. Fable 4 is being made by Playground Games. Let's say X Studio, along with the Coalition, is making the new Perfect Dark. If Perfect Dark came out this year, along with a Crackdown 3, which I don't think it will, but along with Crackdown 3, and let's say a Halo game, and a Forza Horizon game, I'm happy with that from Microsoft, to be bluntly honest. To me, that's a good first-party lineup from Microsoft. If they can, in a calendar year, give us Forza Horizon, give us Crackdown, give us Halo 6, and a new Perfect Dark. I'd be very happy.
Yeah, so that whole thing came from a thread that the guy mentioned Albion, which is obviously the reference to Fable, playing around with Perfect Dark again, Crackdown 3 with a 4-player co-op. Now that's something that I could potentially see, but didn't Crackdown already have a 4-player co-op?
Yeah, that's why I kind of brushed that one off, because I was like, wait, didn't it already have the co-op?
Right.
Maybe it was just 2-player co-op and now they expanded it to 4. I don't know.
Right.
But again, if them delaying it is to get these kind of features in it and get it working that way, then please delay it as long as possible.
And then the line that I think that caught everybody's eye was having a really high player count for Xbox's biggest franchise. So
yeah, Halo.
So we're talking potentially more than, what is it, 4-on-4 or whatever, 8-on-8, more than 16 people, potentially 32 to 64 people playing on Halo. So truly big.
That could backfire, though. by the way.
You think
that
so?
That could backfire. Yes.
Is that because of how maybe PUBG is performing? Or is that more
because
game code versus connections?
It's how are you going to implement it? Are you implementing it in a Battlefield style?
Or a Battle Royale
or a Battle Royale style, a.k.a. PUBG. Because then now look, let me put it this way. I don't think 343 is making Halo 6 and putting in a PUBG Battle Royale multiplayer feature. I don't. To me, that just doesn't fit. The Halo
the
vernacular,
canon, right.
The canon. So it would lean more towards being similar to Battlefield in that sense. Now, what's the unique take on it? If it is, let's just say it's 64 people, mm-hmm. right? What is going to be your unique take so that it is not literally herding freaking cats trying to get people to work together in that large of a scale on a console? Because let's be real, it has taken DICE probably a good decade to perfect their multiplayer.
So the way you do it is similar to how Fortnite does it with their 50-on-50 game type, where you've got groups of four individually working as a team with other groups of four and three and two until you have your 64, right? So you could have one-on-one, you could have single player lone wolf style players. You could have your duos, you could have squads of people in there until you get your number versus number battle. That's the only, you're not going to, there's no way you're, I mean, it's, you can hardly do that with real people on a conference call. So there's no way.
Exactly. That's my point.
There's no way you're going to be able to do that with people online, but you do that with small groups. And eventually in a game, for example, like that 50-on-50 with Fortnite, you see that. Like, eventually, people start to, you start seeing that, okay, well, you've got these two groups of four over here working on the left on this same thing. Let's start doing it. And as people start playing more and more in that game style, people just get it. They start to pick it up, right? They pick up the meta, which is what these other players or the more advanced players are starting to do. And that's how you start to evolve that player base. So it's going to have a little bit of, you know, growing pains and stumbling early on, but eventually people do start to pick up that meta of the game. So I can definitely see if they want to do the 32-on-32 or even go 64-on-64 or bigger, the opportunity is there. Yeah. Again, it's like trying to run a marathon at 6 months old. It's not going to happen. You're going to have, you need to learn to walk before you can run. So there is, I definitely can see if they can code it, it can work, right? Because we've already seen the experience starting to work out.
Right.
So,
right. Well, let me again, Ms. Leo. So one other thing, Mech Assault is also something that was rumored in this as well.
Correct.
Would be very welcome to see that come back too.
Oh yeah.
But how about this speculation? So, and this actually will transition off into something else later. What if, because let's go back in history here. Remember, Bungie left Microsoft back in 2007, mm-hmm. right? Like shortly after Halo 3. Part of the reason was they wanted their independence so that they could start doing their own. They didn't want to just be the Halo studio. They wanted to do something else, right?
They wanted to be the Destiny studio.
right. Well, but this is leading to my point. They wanted to do Destiny. That obviously was a concept all the way back then, and even in 2007, and probably even earlier in that, which prompted all this. So Microsoft didn't want to do that. I think we'd all agree right now, if they'd have kept Bungie in-house and allowed them to do Destiny, and Destiny was exclusive to Xbox, that would be a huge thing for them, right? What if, now follow me down this rabbit hole, what if Halo 6, you still have your traditional single player with Master Chief, he saves the universe, Cortana, the whole thing, but they expand it out so that once you quote-unquote finish the single player, it basically becomes a Destiny-esque type of game with full co-op features, multiplayer, going quests. They have, I'm not saying it's like a full-on raid like you see in Destiny, but other things that you can do cooperatively together. And that's where this rumor of more people playing.
Connections per session.
More session.
So it going from a campaign to a PvE environment.
Well, yeah, they're turning Halo into a shared
universe. It seems to be a good path, simply because you're opening up this shared universe for gameplay, right? You're no longer locked into this what is it the reference that they call it, the sandbox style of gameplay, where you have just this. I can definitely see how a game like that lends to a shared universe, because you want, that's the way that games are coming out now. You've got the Destinies. It's shown to be the right recipe for success for D1. D2, you know, I guess we could talk about that later, right? We'll talk about that after we talk about this, because that's a good segue for it. But I think the way games in general are coming out in late 2017, 2018 now, things are starting to morph in gaming, where it's now, and actually I think it's that the guy from EA that said it, the shared services, right? The shared services model of games. And that's a great way to transition Halo from being type X, right? And, you know, Power of X, whatever, we'll go there with the bad cliche. But we've got, you know, game style, game type X. How do you transition that to today? Right? How do you transition that to a model today that'll succeed and continue to be a solid game and a solid game structure, so that Microsoft and 343 to continue to build on it, so that they can continue giving a level of service on top of the game? I don't know. I think it's a good, I think it would be a solid move. Now, again, you know, we're, you know, I'm just a guy in Florida that collects comic books and plays video games. And, you know, I don't know if they'll ever do that, because, you know, Microsoft holds on to that IP and that canon. But I think it would make sense for them to say, look, this is, who knows, they're probably already doing it. And, you know, you come out on top with your Miss Leo prediction again.
To be fair, I don't think this is going to happen. This is obviously just crazy speculation, but just to have some fun with it and say, let's say they did do something similar to this. I don't think they would do it as Halo 6. I think Halo 6 will stand single player, finish it. All right, go into your traditional multiplayer, rinse and repeat, a couple unique features, and just move on from there, right? I think if they did something like this, it would be called Halo : blah, 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 completely separate from Halo 6, but it lives in that universe. You know what I mean? Because I don't think they're going to risk changing the IP that drastically on the main Halo game. It would be like you have Halo Wars and all that. It would be a quote unquote Halo inspired universe game, and then go from there, right? Versus trying to mess with the current formula that they have with Master Chief. I think Master Chief games will stay Master Chief games, and then this would be something different where you get to create your own character. It has different abilities. They add the RPG, quote unquote RPG elements into it. Shared universe, you go on missions together, you have the PvP portion of it. Again, some very similar to Destiny and Division and what they're going to do with Anthem, something like that. But it would be Microsoft's under the Halo brand. Only place you're playing it is on an Xbox, which, hey, I would like to see the attempt. Let's put it that way. Let's take that risk. You know, let's try it. Which it would be a huge undertaking. Look, we're both IT guys. I can't even imagine the infrastructure that they got to ramp up to be able to get that done, which, you know, transitioning even over to what Destiny's doing or what BioWare is going to do with Anthem, that's where the majority of your cost is coming from, is building up that infrastructure to just support the game on a daily basis. You know what I mean? So if Microsoft were doing something like this, I guarantee you it's not happening anytime soon. We probably wouldn't see it until the next console, because it'd probably take them a good 2 or 3 years just to get the infrastructure in place to be able to support it.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. I mean, I can't even imagine what something like Blue Hole and that whole team is doing for PUBG or Destiny's or Bungie's doing for Destiny, just to be able to support that monster player base across console, PC. That's some serious that's some serious infrastructure. I mean, and speaking of Destiny 2, I mean, this is your world, right? The blog post came out.
All right. You want me to go into
it? Let's go there, because I've been wanting, it's funny because I was researching it and I'm kind of interested right now. So let's talk about that, because I know people have been curious about it.
Okay. So Danny ain't here. Well, he is here, but he ain't here. He can't control us. So we're going to Destiny Talk Radio. So Christopher Barrett, who's game director for Destiny 2 moving forward, as far as just updates, changes, and what they're going to do with this universe. He came out with a blog post on Bungie.net, and he kind of gave us a roadmap for 2018 on what Bungie as a studio is looking to do with Destiny 2, the changes, and et cetera. So I'm not going to go word for word. I'm going to kind of just run through this, give a quick comment, and then, you know, we'll go from there. And obviously, Pete, jump in where you feel free. So first thing that they talked about was Eververse, which has been a hot button topic, you know, throughout the Destiny community, because they pushed way too many things into Eververse versus having you get them naturally throughout gameplay in the game. And that's the first change that they're addressing, is Eververse isn't going away, because there's no way in hell it was going to go away. But they're going to de-emphasize Eververse, and they're going to allow you to start getting these cosmetic items through natural gameplay, through, I'm assuming, specific quests going after certain things, or, you know, item would like. Let me give you the classic example of this. They took away one of the biggest things that I chased in Destiny 1. And that was the gosh darn raid ships. I swear to God, to me, that was something I chased more than anything. I never got the raid ship from Wrath of the Machine, because it was one of the most unique items that you could get in the game. But I'll be damned if I didn't play that raid 10,000 times trying to get it, and I just simply never got it. So they took that magic away of you grinding for something of your own free will, because you knew there was something there that you desired. And it was simply a cosmetic item that had no advantage in the game. It was just simply a raid ship. And they took that away and stuck all that stuff into Eververse. And now they're pulling that stuff back out and they're sprinkling it back into the game. So you have things to go chase in the end game. You have things to go do with your buddies.
I do like the way that they've started to shift the balance from the way it was to now you're getting activity rewards over bright engrams. I think bright engrams has its place in the game. I just don't know or think it should be as highly touted or as highly important as it was. I don't think Eververse will ever go away, especially not after they've put so much towards it. But I think I like the path that they're going towards. Like, there's a good opportunity. I don't think Eververse was ever going to go away. But I want to see how leveling and XP gains come across as a result, because I know that they started to tinker and play with those. They started bringing about and talking about Crimson Days for people that have completely stepped away from Destiny 2. What is it? What are Crimson Days? What is Eater of Worlds? Things like that. Because I know that there was changes made to both Crimson Days and the Leviathan and Eater of Worlds stuff.
Okay. First of all, I don't want to drag this into way too much Destiny talk. So
it's Destiny Talk Radio. Come on, man.
No. I'm sick of that. I don't want to turn in a 30-minute discussion on Destiny 2. So I'll just be short and sweet about this. Crimson Days during Destiny 1 was a Valentine's Day event, and it had a multiplayer event that was doubles, to where if one of your people, if your partner was killed, then you would get a damage buff, and you'd be way stronger than you were normally. And it was almost like, you know, your significant other has died, and it boosts you in strength, so to speak. Right. So, and the thing about that, going back to cosmetic items that I freaking chased in Crimson Days, was the gosh darn chocolate ghost. I had to have it. So, and ironically enough, Crimson Days is what got my son and I into playing Destiny together. Like, from that point on, because we were doing doubles together and we had so much damn fun. That was the point in time where we're like, all right, we're in for the long haul. We love this. We want to keep playing multiplayer together. So that was that event. How that's going to work here in Destiny 2, not sure yet, because just remember, Destiny 2 is a 4v4 environment, which that is actually changing because they're going to go back to 6v6 now at some point. Which, if you remember, at the Destiny reveal event, when I interviewed Mark Noseworthy, I said it. I didn't like it then. When I talked to Jason Jones and Deej and Pete Parsons, when Deej set that up and I got to sit down with those guys and we were talking, I told them, you know, and it wasn't an interview. We're just talking normally. I thought it was a mistake. I go, even if you make it 4v4, the point is variety with multiplayer. I like doing doubles with my son. I like going 1v1, you know, don't force us into one multiplayer mode, which they're changing that now. You know, private matches is coming back finally. So there's going to be that customization to it, which I'll even say with the 6v6 that's coming back, it will not come back on the current maps because that will be a cluster. Those maps are built for 4v4. So when 6v6 does come back, it's because new maps coming out will support 6v6, in my opinion. There's no way they're going to force 6v6 into these matches because it just simply won't work. So I'm happy to see that change. And like I said, I got sidetracked. I know you asked me about, Eater of Worlds. Eater of Worlds is the raid lair.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the raid layer. So that's, you go in, it's a shorter experience than going through the full Leviathan. It's actually harder, which is good. I was happy to see that change with Eater of Worlds. It's very fun. It's a lot of fun. Again, the raids are not the problem with Destiny at all. The raids are still some of the top tier co-op experiences you're going to find in gaming. And Eater of Worlds just goes along with that. So no problems with that at all. It's a fun thing to play. Again, if you decide to jump back into Destiny 2, absolutely, we'll have to run through it.
Okay. Yeah, and from what I understand, they fixed the raid, so to speak. So now people that go and actually play the raid, they're actually going to get raid-specific gear as opposed to just getting randomized crap gear.
Okay. Couple things on that. The problem with the raid was, number one, you're getting token drops versus actual armor weapon drops. You would get some, but you weren't getting them in the frequency that you were getting in like the previous raids in Destiny 1. And you basically were completing the raid, getting a bunch of tokens, and then you go to the raid vendor to turn in tokens and play the RNG lottery to see what you get. That took part of the special moments out of the raid. Part of the thing was you take down the boss and boom, right then and there, you'd get this weapon drop or this armor drop or a ghost would drop or whatever. That was part of the excitement of it. The second part of that is they took out raid specific perks out of the weapons and the armor.
Right.
That was a part of the whole thing. You would chase a complete raid set because the perks that you would get in said weapons and armor set would help you going into the raid. Yeah, for future raids. You know, that was the whole point of that. So they're fixing that. They're going to change that. And I actually think that's changing with the January 30th update, where we're going to start seeing raid-specific gear with perks on it. Because, again, and I talked about this last week, part of the problem with Destiny 2 is they stop making weapons and gear feel special. I stop feeling the need to chase certain types of weapons because they fit my style of gameplay or they gave me an advantage in this situation. And this is being real. It really doesn't matter what type of weapons and gear you put on in Destiny right now. It just doesn't. All of them are so bland. And again, I've said this before and I'll say it again. They catered way too much towards the damn casual audience. And that's the problem with Destiny right now. They were like, we got to get more people playing it. So let's make it easier for everyone to join. And everyone gets a gold star. You know, that's what they went for. And that's not Destiny. It's not. That shouldn't be any game. You know, I understand having the campaign and the early game stuff, and you want to cater to everyone to get everyone, let's get a feel for it. Let's see how it plays. But once we get to that end game, man, that needs to be for me, for the dedicated hardcore people that have been playing this damn game for 3 years.
Right.
That's what it's for. You know, give me unique items and unique things to chase in the end game. That's the whole point of it, you know, because if not, here we are. I've not touched Destiny in 3 weeks. And that's just honest. That's right. Just being honest. I've not played it since before the holiday. And where's my incentive to go play it? And even with these changes that are coming right now, I'm probably going to wait until the end of the month before I even start jumping into it again, because I just don't have the incentive to go play it. And that's a damn shame. That's on Bungie. That's on Bungie and Activision for making the game that they currently have. But I will give kudos to Chris Barrett, because he's been very active on Twitter, and he even tweeted a day or two ago that they realize they need to make weapons and gear feel special again. And that's also part of one of the other changes coming here, like exotic gear, sandbox change. They're going to look at the weapons and they're going to try and tweak these things and make them feel special again. Because look, I can tell you off the top of my head right now, every weapon in Destiny 1 that I coveted, that I had to have, that my loadouts and my armor sets and all that. Destiny 2, I don't know. I couldn't tell you, you know?
So, and I want to use this as a transition to the next topic, because you mentioned that it almost seems that Bungie listened too much to the community. And I don't know if that's a bad thing, because a title that has done that, and finally 2 years after launch, is the game I think that they originally envisioned, is The Division. You know, you and I have been talking about playing 1.8. I picked it up.
Can we pause on that? Because we actually didn't go through everything that you're changing in Destiny 2.
Okay. All right. If you want to go back and talk about that.
And again, I will cliff note this.
Okay.
I won't go in depth. But like I said, we talked about Eververse. They're going to take another look at the XP rates, because you remember it was the whole XP fiasco. Mm-hmm. So they're going to take a look at that again and try and fix that. Again, with the January 30th update, Masterwork armor is coming, along with obviously the current Masterwork weapons that are out there. So that's another good thing. Like we said before, they're going to rework the raid reward system and actually add raid specific perks to the weapons and the gear. These are all coming in the January update. Iron Banner is going to come back at the end of the month. Faction Rally, I believe, is actually coming this Tuesday, the 16th. In February, strike scoring. Mm-hmm. They're actually going to add scoring back to the strikes, which was cool. I really enjoyed that. They're going to take another pass at the mods and actually make mods matter, you know, in the game, which was another problem in this. A big one for me, I don't know about you, but the Nightfall, they're getting rid of the stupid timer.
Yes.
I liked it and disliked it. I liked it for certain, to chase certain a weapon or something. I understand putting that timer in there, but to have every damn Nightfall be around that timer, didn't like that, you know. And I understood they wanted to kind of nudge people into game, playing the game and playing it a certain way. I get that, but I feel like they nudged way too far with that timer. And it became more of a frustrating experience than a fun experience.
It shouldn't be a requirement. It should be
exactly
if you get it before the timer, then you get a bonus. But if you just beat it, it shouldn't dictate whether you actually beat that strike or not.
Well, I disagree on that, in the sense that I'm okay with the timer. Just don't do it every damn week. I could see if it was a once a month thing, or like I said, for a specific quest of a weapon, mm-hmm. to have the timer in there, because you need to go earn it. I get it. But for the every week Nightfall, no. Just put different modifiers in there every week and let people figure that out. That way, if this week it's the timer and the timer isn't something that I enjoy, then I guess what? I skip the Nightfall this week, and then I come back next week when you have a different modifier that I do enjoy, you know, playing. You know, I'm not saying make the Nightfall easy. Keep the Nightfall very difficult, but just don't force a certain gameplay mechanic every week for a Nightfall. I never enjoyed that. I just never thought
so
that was fun.
So should you maybe incorporate it as a second Nightfall, like a timed Nightfall, kind of similar to how they have the weekly and so on?
I just make it a modifier, a particular type of modifier. Just don't enforce it every week. Mm-hmm. I don't think that needs to be there all the time. But like I said, I understand it as a gameplay mechanic. Like I said, the exotic shotgun that you get from the raid, Let it have the timer on it, because now you need to go earn that damn shotgun. Right. I understand that. But to just have it every week as that, no. Again, with the heroic strikes, they're also going to bring modifiers back to that. That'll be later in the spring. It won't be in the February update. In the February update, they are adding You will be able to see where your fire team members are on your destination map. That was sorely needed to know where everyone was at any one time. You know, on the PC side in the February update, they're putting in the tower chat, which is cool. I think that was should have been there from day one. And they're also going to kind of work on the exotic repetition. So it's not 100% fixed. You just won't get the same exotic back to back, but you'll still wind up getting duplicates and things like that. So these are the things that are coming in the February update. Again, like we're talking with the spring update, and I'm going to go through this quick, folks. So private matches is coming back. The 6v6 playlist, I think that's very key to say that playlist is coming, because I think they're going to introduce new maps that will be for that playlist that can handle 6v6. Mayhem is coming back as an event. Again, they're doing a weapons balancing what will come during the spring. They're going to make even more improvements to Iron Banner and faction rallies. They're going to have a reduction on repetitive playlists, which is good. They're going to add 50 more slots to the vault, which is not the final fix. They're even going to take another pass at it to try and improve it even more. They're going to have basically like the exotic accessories tab, mm-hmm. you know, for all your exotic ships, sparrows, ghosts, things like that. Because, again, your exotics are static, so they shouldn't have to take up a slot in your vault. You know what I mean? Other than, you know, you adding like the weapon skin or things like that. I understand that. But like I said, the heroic strike changes that are coming in the fall, they're going to look at Trials of the Nine, things like that to try and fix it. All these things are coming in spring 2018 or even as later as fall 2018. So there's going to be some masterwork exotics that are eventually coming, more Crucible playlists like with the Rumble, things like that. So sum this up. Destiny is... they're going to fix it throughout 2018. And that's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing, which goes back to what I said last week. Should have delayed the game until spring of this year, in my opinion, and had more of these fixes and changes in there from day one. And I understand a lot of these things are coming from community feedback, but some of these things, in my opinion, were just simply common sense. And if, again, if the rumors are true, they really only had a 16-month development cycle for Destiny 2. I understand why a lot of things got cut and didn't make it in at launch. But in my opinion, instead of just rushing it out the door to meet your standard September launch window, push it back 6 more months and get the things in there that should have been in there from day one. And that's really all it comes down to. So still love the game. Like I said, taking a break from it on purpose to play other things and to just do other things in my life right now. But I'll be back end of the month into February when some of these changes start happening, and it'll be all about Destiny again. So that's Destiny Talk Radio. Let's talk about another game, as Pete was about to allude to, that took some time, but I feel like they finally got it right now.
Yeah, The Division. It's the 1.8 update is a culmination of changes. And it seems that, and it, I don't know why it's taken 2 years. I know when it first came out, you had your concerns and your trepidations over what was the final, what was the meta of the game? Like, what was the end game? What was going to be the concern and what was going to be the overlying thing that was going to keep bringing players back over time, right? Like we definitely saw it as a success. It was the highest selling launch title in Ubisoft history. And then over a 3 or 4 month period, it just, you know, it hit the cliff and flew, you know, and just dropped the bottom dropped out from under it. I mean, hell, last night I played till like 2:45 in the morning playing The Division, and I'm playing, there's just so much content that's available now for that, between not just the regular game, you've got the underground, you've got HVT missions, you've got dailies and weeklies on that, you've got the Resistance, which is think Horde mode in The Division, you've got obviously the Dark Zone, which has been crazy, and then something that I didn't even know about, which apparently was already there, but since I hadn't played it since last year, I really didn't put any mind to it. It's a mode called Survival. And it's so much fun. You essentially go into the game and, you know, there's a monster nor'easter / blizzard going on. So the temperatures are like 15 below zero or whatever. And think of it as kind of like their version of Battlegrounds. Battlegrounds meets PvE, because you go in, you have to immediately start crafting clothes to keep yourself warm. And then you have to constantly look for fires or look for rooms where you can go in to bring your temperature back up. And as soon as you go back outside, your temperature starts to dip. Plus you're sick. So you have to constantly look for food and drink and medicine. And then you're fighting, you know, you're fighting the regular PvE enemies that you would see. You know, you're the bad guys with the hammer or the baseball bats. It's been so long since I've been back in the division, so I still have to relearn the names of some of these characters. But you have to fight everybody and constantly start to level up your gear. And the point is to get enough gear to get into the dark zone, all while you're trying to maintain your health, stave off sickness, stave off the cold, and then you're going to the dark zone, and then you have to get your gear, and then you have to try to exfil or extract holding onto your gear. And so, you know, I did that last night, and I think it was for about an hour and a half, 2 hours of going through in survival. I was playing with one of our community members, Duffy. It was so much fun that, you know, now I'm like, wow, like, where was this last year? Like and I understand,
right.
this is a culmination of discussion with the community, the developer, you know, Massive going back and saying, okay, well, this is what the community wants. Let's start to help. Let's start to listen and start going back and having that force feedback of going back and forth of development. What does the community want? Let's give them this. Let's go back and forth, which is why I had asked. And I thought that was a great way to segue. Maybe, and I don't know, maybe that's just the direction of which, you know, maybe the direction from which Bungie already wanted Destiny to go didn't coincide with some of the community development discussions. Like maybe, you know, maybe just wasn't held to as much, you know, credence. But I mean, I love The Division. I loved it 2 years ago when it came out. You know, I got the backpack next to me. I got the watch on my wrist.
Yep.
And it took some time for it to get back up to that next level, but the content is there now. Like, and it took 2 years to get to this point. And, you know, I hope that The Division doesn't turn into, you know, The Division 2, which is rumored to come out or rumored to be announced soon. I hope that doesn't, you know, what we're seeing now with Destiny 2. You know, I'd hate to see, after The Division has taken so many steps to improve itself and get it back into the good graces of gamers, that it does that stumbling block and fails. So it's interesting to see.
I would think that Massive, you know, if and or when a Division 2 comes out, the first questions that they're going to be asked by the community and by the media is they're going to look at what's currently happening with Bungie, with Destiny, and they're going to say, are you going to take all the features and the lessons learned that you've had over the past X amount of years with The Division 1 and make sure that all those things are there day one with The Division 2? Mm-hmm. If you don't, what the hell are you doing? Delay the game until they're there. I mean, let's be real. Don't strip out. The Division better not do what Destiny's doing right now. Take and again, I'm gonna jump in and play, because listening to Pete talk about it and just people online, everyone is telling me this game is just absolute fire right now. And I've never given the game a real shot. I never have, you know. So I have it loaded on my PC now. I just need to just jump in. I actually did jump in for like an hour, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, but that was about it. But back to my point is, if this game has all these great features, there's all these great lessons learned, and the game is currently in a state that's very playable and a lot of fun for people to jump in, when you bring out your inevitable sequel, all that stuff has to be there day one. It has to be. I don't care if it's in a new city, new region, or whatever. All these features and perks and weapons and things that you've done, we better have something similar when the sequel comes out. Or what the hell are you doing? And on top of that, you need to iterate on whatever it is that you're doing now, because then people are going to scream, well, why did I just spend $60 for The Division 2 when it's just simply The Division 1 with updates? So it's tough. There's that fine line where, you know, and I was talking about this on another subject, but, you know, change isn't easy. You know, change is uncomfortable, right? there's going to be some discomfort when you make change. So it's not going to be perfect whenever they go to their sequel, but you need to take enough things that you did right in the previous game and make sure that they're there day one for the new game. So I'm just listening to you talk about it has me very excited about it.
And it's not just me. That's the crazy part. Like you've got like big name streamers like Summit1G on Twitch is one of the streamers that I follow. Him and a bunch of other people are going into this game now. They're going back in after a couple of years, and it's not just, you know, the Dark Zone. You've got stuff like HVT missions. You can go on the underground. There's just, like I said, there's so many things to do that someone like you, Paris, who has never given the game the opportunity because you were concerned about the level of content and the end game. Like, what is there to chase right now? Like it didn't exist before, but now classified gear is the top tier items to go out and go get. So now you can go through that whole progression of getting the good, better, best gear sets and chasing those gear sets. Cause now there's like multiple gear sets that you can chase. Cause there's I don't want to say profiles, but there's different collections of gear sets, you know? So if you want to go towards, you know, if you want to, if it specifies towards the type of gameplay that you want to go to, you know, you can do that. And then you can go for classified gear within that style. So again, there's just so much content in there. I'm so glad to see that the Division is finally, you know, coming back up into the good graces. And again, this is another Ubisoft, you know, trait. You know, you see that they had a game like Rainbow Six Siege that was good fundamentally, but then it just needed that pickup of listening to the community, getting the right type of gameplay and content into the game itself. We saw it with Wildlands now that they brought in PvP. Now you see it with The Division where it came in like gangbusters, it fell off, and now you're starting to see this massive resurgence because of the quality of life, as you'd like to call it, the quality of life improvements made by Massive. So, you know, if anything, this is like a model that Ubisoft is doing, and it should be good. It should be something that other developers and publishers, if they're not already, should take note. So, you know, this is what you guys may want to start doing in the future, is start looking at what these guys are doing, because they've apparently got it right.
Yeah. Yeah. And BioWare, we're looking at you with, you know, what's going to happen with Anthem, man. That's going to be another one. I'm going to say now that game does not come out in 2018. I think they delay it, because I think with the loot box fiascos, obviously everything going on with Bungie right now, if they're taking a real honest look at it, if any of this stuff was already currently incorporated, step back, get it out of the game, do it in a more consumer friendly way, and then bring it back out. So if it got delayed till spring 2019, it wouldn't shock me at all, you know, instead of trying to rush it out and force it out this holiday when no one's asking you to. We're good. We got plenty of games to play. Take your time. Every developer, and I understand this is a business, it's about making money. Yep. You got to release in certain quarters and fiscal years and all that. I understand all that. So these things go into it. But if you can delay a game and you get that extra 3 to 6 months to nail it, to get it right, please do. Please do. You know, that as a gamer, that's all I ask. Please delay it and get it right so that we're not spending the last hour and 20 minutes on this podcast talking about what's wrong with the game instead of celebrating these games and talking about what's right, why we're so excited about them. And oh my God, remember last night when we did this, and oh, it was so much fun. It's like, I just want to smile again. I just want to smile. I just want to smile and have a dumb, well, I look dumb anyways, but have the dumb look on my face when I'm playing a game because I'm loving it. You know, that's where we want to be. I'm sick of talking about the business side of gaming. I want to talk about the actual game part of gaming, you know, and that means having fun. And that's all I got. We've talked long enough, I think, on here. So I don't know, Pete, any last words from you?
No, I'm good. I'm glad we kind of ended it on a good note. We started good. But yeah, I'm happy where we're at gaming wise. I like to see games like The Division I don't like to see them stumble, but like I've said in the past, and you know, I've said it, you know, I tell it to my kids all the time. To succeed, you need to fail. Right.
Yeah.
And it's not about how often you fail, but more importantly, how often you pick yourself back up. And we've seen games do this before. We'll see it again. We saw Nintendo somewhat falter with the Wii or Wii U, in my opinion. I know it was phenomenally selling console, but we saw what happens when you see what happens when Nintendo took, you know, their lessons learned from the Wii, transitioned it into the Switch, and now we see an amazing console. We've seen it with the Division. Now this 1.8 update has got this game back to Gucci status. You know, hopefully Bungie, I know they've got it in them, right? We've seen them do it before. Now it's time for them to pick themselves up off the floor and bring Destiny 2 back into the good graces of everybody. So, hey, we saw it with the Hurricanes, right? They went from crap to good again, so.
I'll keep my comments to myself. But okay, all right. So
with that.
So, I think we'll go ahead and wrap this up. We've definitely gone on long enough. I'm sure Danny's somewhere screaming, just stop, you're going too long. But again, thank everyone for listening. Really appreciate it. And Danny, please remind everyone where they can leave us feedback.
Send us your feedback or questions. Yep. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right. Well, Pete, any final words?
No, I am good to go. I'm good to go. I'm going to have
all right.
To play. I think I need to go catch a nap because I didn't sleep much last night after playing Survival.
Right on. So with that, this has been episode 728 of Gamertag Radio. I'm Paris. That's Pete. And we'll see you guys in a few days.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.